in the corner, back by the woodpile.
It's my favorite podcast. It's also my favorite.
Hey, homie. Hey, homie. I'm Spun Counter Guy. Thanks for stopping by. This here is another edition of Trying to Herd Cats, the philosophical podcast where we throw anonymous quotes at anonymous folks and see what the brain coughs up. So let's get right into it. First quote, we can love the artificial manifestations of life as well because humans pour their life, energy, and skill into it. This is why we love art. This is why we love inventions and technology. This is why even when we're unsatisfied with our lives, we find ourselves getting some satisfaction from the artificial.
I'm having a reaction to the word artificial. That's very interesting. So artificial meaning man-made. So in one respect, yes, art is man-made. So it could be artificial. I think it's not artificial in that it's a manifestation of one's creativity, heart, mind, soul.
But a painting of a tree is a painting.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't think artificial here is being used as negative. It's just
not.
It's not
alive.
The real thing. It's a,
not the real original.
It's a symbol of.
Yeah. Okay, I can be with that.
But what about a calculator? Because
some people really love technology that people created. So I see people who are so enthralled with the latest computer gadget, not just for what it does, but what intellect it took to figure out the engineering and the mind that went through it. That's not me. I don't understand that at all.
But you recognize that it's someone put some effort into it.
And, absolutely. Yeah. I can understand that. And I could respect it. And I, things that physics and engineering had something to do with, that's so not who I am and how my mind works, but that someone can figure out how to put a bridge across a body of water, that's amazing to me.
I think if we didn't have those bridges.
A plane. I'm so grateful for the plane and who, and you know, and the Wright brothers for working so hard to get that done. I can fly to California every few weeks.
Almost getting themselves killed trying to make it.
That's right. We have this drive. We do have this drive to create and move forward. And a danger of that when it comes to technology, I mean, I know that we're going off side road here, but a danger of that is that our ethics are way, we're not considering ethics along with our technology, like what the big impact is. We're just, I can do it, so I should do it. Rather than, well, we might be able to do it, but what are the consequences of doing this? And when it's art, that's different. Art is about expression and consideration, and artists have helped people actually think about the community and the common man and what the strife is that we're dealing with.
But do you think that art is also an amoral thing that could be abused? It could be, I think, for example, like the biggest criticism of technology is that people are using it to replace reality. Instead of talking to each other, we're instant messaging we have a virtual reality girlfriend or something.
Right, yeah.
But at the same time, you could do that with art as well. Art is not the real, it's not really a tree. And you could have a really nice picture of a tree in your house.
Yeah, actually, there was an article I just read yesterday on how kids are learning about nature in books and they're painting nature, but no one's in nature. Like the last time one of these kids was actually on a blade of grass under a tree was years, and that's appalling to me. So technology and art shouldn't replace the real thing. That's a misunderstanding of how we can benefit from technology and art. I paint owls. I love owls. It never replaces when I actually see a real owl, but I have a painting of an owl outside my bathroom, and so I don't have owls that live in my house, so I could see a representation of an owl.
It might be a problem if you had owls in your house.
That would, that could
especially
be
for your dog.
I need someone.
What are owls' enemies? I'm trying to think. I'm sure they have a natural
eagles.
Enemy. Oh, see, yeah, so what you need is a big,
big
plastic eagle out here. That will keep the owls away, so they won't eat your dog. You know.
See, that's why I have a painting of an owl in my house.
Ah, see. So there's some benefit that I have in the room.
Yeah, I've thought of all the ethical issues there.
Again, we can love the artificial manifestations of life as well because humans pour their life, energy, and skill into it. This is why we love art. This is why we love inventions and technology. This is why even when we're unsatisfied with our lives, we find ourselves getting some satisfaction from the artificial.
Okay, so I would say that humanity is intrinsically creative. And as such, they tend to take those abilities and run with them as far as they can. Because in a sense, that gives them fulfillment in order to use their abilities as best they're able. Like a Michelangelo or a Shakespeare or a Van Gogh, creative people derive immense satisfaction from being able to manifest their talents. And this is one of the reasons why we are attracted to those manifestations, whether it's art or technology, because this represents a concrete instance of someone's creative abilities that has been made tangible.
What is something that you make that is a manifestation of your life energy?
Software.
Okay. Does people appreciate it?
I hope so.
They use it, right?
Well, yeah, they have no choice.
Has anyone ever recognized all the effort you put into it? Or?
Yeah, one of the most recent projects I worked on, they gave me some time to go back and redesign something that I had originally done. And after I was finished with the redesign, I showed it to the other developers on the team, and they were stunned and said, "This is just absolutely beautiful code. The way you've laid it out, the way you've separated it, it is very elegant." And so not many people, actually only the people who have access to the source code would be able to recognize that, not the end users, but...
So your fan base is kind of a limited market there.
Yeah.
I would love it to see, even though I probably wouldn't appreciate all that much, but I would love to see an art gallery which is full of screens and code. And so all your kind could go in and admire your work or other people's work.
Or dog it.
Yeah, that too, yeah. It's like, oh, I can't believe his...
He used tabs instead of spaces.
Jeez. His algorithms blow.
Again, we can love the artificial manifestations of life as well because humans pour their life, energy, and skill into it. This is why we love art. This is why we love inventions and technology. This is why even when we're unsatisfied with our lives, we find ourselves getting some satisfaction from the artificial.
I think it depends, because in some poor countries or some poor countryside, they do not have enough exhibition place or some enough money to see the real art or to do some real things, which is normal in some high class people circle. Mm-hmm. So some businessmen can use this artificial arts to show in the countryside. So they also can be of the absorb the feeling of the art from this.
Because art itself is artificial. And yeah, you're saying that even artificial of the real can affect people.
Yes, It still can be. Even though it is not the absolutely real, but at least it's an artist.
So, have you ever seen a picture of Van Gogh?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you've never seen the real picture of Van Gogh?
Never. I didn't see it before, but I'm sure here a lot of the Chinese people also do not see the real picture of the Van Gogh, but they still can be affected by them.
Again, we can love the artificial manifestations of life as well because humans pour their life, energy, and skill into it. This is why we love art. This is why we love inventions and technology. This is why even when we're unsatisfied with our lives, we find ourselves getting some satisfaction from the artificial.
Well, so I have a guilty pleasure.
Okay.
And I tend to not talk about it a lot because I feel like I have so much explaining to do, it's not even worth it, and I don't want to hear myself explain why I love reality TV.
Okay.
Because I am really stressed out.
In your
with
life?
With my life.
Okay.
So, juggling dental school and a part-time job, getting ready to take my state boards, you know, all of this stuff is pretty high stakes. I'm taking out student loans, I'm anxious about debt, I'm not getting enough sleep, my hair is falling out, my brain is kind
of
constantly, I mean, not noticeably, I don't think. Yeah,
because the wig helps.
Yeah. But I feel a lot of the time like I can't find that rest in my mind, that blank space. A lot of people turn to meditation for that, and I'm sure that's healthier than Basketball Wives.
Right. Was that one of the ones you like?
I did really. I got onto a Basketball Wives train. I've watched Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Mm-hmm. I have a lower threshold for shows like Hoarders and people with psychological disorders, but I kind of dive into those, and it gives me a reprieve from my stress to take me to that blank place. And so for the quote to talk about how we kind of cherish the artificial, I don't think my cherishing the artificial comes from a boredom in my life or a lack of anything, but I love that it's there. It's just like a really viscous pool that I can dive into.
I can say you're in good company because when I had my rental store, movie rental place, I was shocked that the type of people who rented horror films, and like horrible, horrible films, like as in like not good, like not well put together, but they were all Vanderbilt students or lab people or even scientists. I mean, I couldn't believe it. But based on what you're saying, I get it. They need something that's completely mindless because all day they've been, you know, obviously
stress, high anxiety.
Yeah, using their brain like a bicep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes you just have to quit flexing and just let it atrophy a little bit. It's restful. And also, I mean, for me, I like watching, I realize the pattern that I liked these shows is basically pointing to that idiot.
Makes you feel better about your own
right?
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't eat drywall. No way, not me. I know drywall's bad for you. Oh, my gosh, why is she getting another facelift? That is the worst idea ever.
Someone eats drywall, by the way. I'm going back to that.
Oh, yeah, there are drywall eaters. There's a show called Freaky Eaters. I watch all of these on Netflix. And the Freaky Eaters are people that get these obsessive directives that they just will only eat. Some people limit their other food intake, and there was a woman who ate nothing but French fries.
Yeah, that's okay. I can get that, but drywall?
Ever. And then there are other people who have this. There's a condition called pica, and those are people who really enjoy eating things with a high mineral content. Rocks, dirt, chalk, ashes, drywall.
Yeah.
There's really no accounting for it. My favorite of all was this woman who had a cornstarch habit. She ate 2 boxes of cornstarch every day. She loved the silky feeling that it had in her mouth. She ate spoonful after spoonful. Her husband had it with her and told her she had to quit. So she told him that she quit, but she was really just hiding it. She had Ziploc bags of cornstarch in her pockets, in her car. And, I mean, sometimes her husband would come home unexpectedly and she had cornstarch all over her face. I mean, she looked, it's like a cartoon version of, you know, a drug addict.
Maybe I should watch that. It would make me feel better by eating so many pork rinds.
Do you have a pork rind fixation?
I love pork rinds, yeah. And one time I was having a little get-together at the apartment I was at, and someone had brought hummus and pita bread.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran out of pita bread. I was like, I got pork rinds. And I thought it was wonderful. But I think everyone's about wanted to throw up.
I think that sounds pretty good. I've never had a pork rind.
Oh, really?
I really love hummus.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I would eat hummus on styrofoam.
You know, by the way, I wanted to say something. I'm kind of glad you said that, because the night that we ran into each other at the art show, you looked really... I didn't know what was wrong with you. Like, I thought, well, either she was really tired, exhausted, or there's something wrong. Like something just happened traumatic, or she's high as a kite. I couldn't tell which, and I was kind of concerned about you, but I didn't want to pry. Plus, there's like a ton of people.
No, not high. Nothing horrible has happened. I'm just stressed.
Okay.
Next quote, beauty is evidence of life. People who display their beauty, both physical and spiritual, are advertised in their life energy. Decorating ourselves can help the exchange of life because it attracts others, pleases their eyes, and we are attracted to these beautiful people because we're attracted to vigor, which we want to feed our own lives.
See, so I was really, really, really sick, and I figured out at one point, which was super weird, that my pain level would increase when I got hungry, and then it would decrease when I ate. So I ended up eating too much as like a pain management tool, which was really annoying because I would kind of eat on a time schedule. I was nowhere near hungry, like ever. So I gained a bunch of weight, and I had never gained weight in my life. And I was, you know, I was born lucky in that I I'm very tall, and I think I have very beautiful features. I have great hair. So it's always been like a thing that I was considered attractive to people. And it was really interesting to gain a bunch of weight because I felt horrible on the inside, but nobody could see it because my illness is considered an invisible illness. And all of a sudden there was this like armor around me in the way that I felt like I kind of started to look on the outside like I felt on the inside. And so then I figured out that there were some much better ways to manage my pain and to heal from my illness and not be in constant pain anymore. And as soon as I wasn't in constant pain anymore, I guess I don't know if people saw it or not, but there were a few people who did who were like really astute. And one of them, I was at a party for something, and he came over to me and he said, "You look fantastic. I am so excited for you. You look amazing." And I looked down at my body and I was like, "What on earth are you talking about?"
When you were overweight, you're saying?
Yeah, I was still overweight. What the change that had happened was that I wasn't in pain all the time. And so what I figured out about being in pain all the time, and I'm talking about all the time, is that when people are in pain, they're cranky,
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like really hard to not have like a bitchy, edgy kind of thing going on all the time. And I also figured out that I think it's like we all have an amount of kind of life energy inside of us. And the life energy in me was so distracted with trying to deal with this constant suffering that it was like my life energy was low, and I think you could see it in my face. And so when I wasn't in pain all the time and I was really starting to heal, like really starting to actually get strong enough and healthy enough to go out into the world and be present and really be focused with my spirit and my heart and my mind, I think that he was picking up on that, and he saw that as really beautiful, and he was expressing that to me, but I didn't recognize it because I wasn't seeing it on the outside. And so that this was probably like 3 years ago. And just in the last 6 months, about 6 or 7 months, I've lost almost 40 pounds. I'm a pound away this morning. And I've gotten like totally full of myself. Like I went through my closet, got rid of half my clothes, and I got some new outfits, and I got a cute haircut, and I put selfies up on Facebook. Like, you know, I'm a Leo, so I'm like out of control, that I feel beautiful. So I'm seeing beauty everywhere I look now too. Me feeling beautiful inside and outside started to change the way that I see things, and I've started taking a lot of photographs with my phone of like random things I observe that mm-hmm. I never would have noticed when I was low in that life energy because I was distracted by it, and now I am observing those things around me, and hopefully I'm telling other people that they look fabulous, and they do.
Again, beauty is evidence of life. People who display their beauty, both physical and spiritual, are advertised in their life energy. Decorating ourselves can help the exchange of life because it attracts others, pleases their eyes, and we are attracted to these beautiful people because we're attracted to vigor, which we want to feed our own lives.
I like that response to beauty. I think that's very true. I think it's, yeah.
Is it something you're conscious of yourself that you try to exude beauty? And I don't mean just like looks, but because you do that obviously.
Do I try and exude? Absolutely not. That would take effort. Uh-huh. To try and be plentiful of anything and try, and when you say exude, I hear put off. Mm. I don't try and put off anything because that would take a lot of effort. Mm-hmm. If it gets put off, then it's probably a response of what is happening.
You're feeding off somebody else. They're going back and forth.
But that's exactly how you have, and let's go to the true sense of, or not true sense, but what people actually think beauty is. Mm. That's how you get people who are actually beautiful, but they are, they're not wearing makeup, there's nothing on them, versus someone who has been plastically modified to be the standards, and they're like, yuck. Or you see someone and then all of a sudden they speak and you're like, yuck, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Or you see someone and then they speak and you think, oh, you know? Mm-hmm. So I absolutely think that, you know, and you call it beauty. It's actually a beautiful quote.
Are there people that you realize that you, don't realize you're doing it, but you're attracted to them, not sexually or something like that, but you just want to be around them because they exude a beauty, not only of physical, but spirit.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. Actually.
Can you give an example of one?
Yeah.
Besides myself.
That too. I mean, I'm selective. And honestly, if you got everybody that I find that to be true in one room, you'd all be different. There's nothing similar about you guys other than you just have that thing for me. Mm-hmm. And it is an attractiveness, not sexually, but mm-hmm. it is a... And it probably is the exchange of what I find attractive, what I want to exude, and that returns to, what was the vulgar? What did you call it?
A vitality?
Vitality?
Vigor.
Vigor. Yeah. That's exactly what that is.
Mm-hmm. Talk about one person that you think exudes beauty and describe, like, some examples of what they do.
Oh, God. I mean, the biggest one in my life.
Yeah.
The beauty there is really emotional. Mm-hmm. Maybe we shouldn't talk about that one.
Really?
Yeah, maybe. It's a good person, you know.
And you're lucky to have him.
God, I hope you cut that part off.
No, I'll keep that.
I just can't. Oh, God.
Yeah.
You know, it's so easy to just shut people off and not understand them and not care when they, you know... When they're not exuding what they can be. Because everybody has it. Everybody can...
Potentially has it, yeah.
And it's not about exuding. It's what's organically there and some what they're giving off when they don't even know it. And we see that all the time because of all the people that we encounter. And this person sees that in everyone somehow.
Uh-huh. And he brings it out.
If that's possible, then he is the ultimate. You know what I mean?
I think he is. I can tell my own life that he's made me a better person. And I can't say that about a lot of people. I think he thinks about it. Like, how can I help Tim improve himself?
He just has that thing. I think he does think about it, but it's even before that. It's I don't know if you call it subconscious or what it is, but it's even before that because, you know, when you can have someone steal and lie to you and hurt you and molest your space and, you know, just be so ugly and understand that it's not them, it's a circumstance, and that person is still a good, and still see the beauty of that person. Mm-hmm. And it's constant, and it's chronic, and it's gorgeous, and at some point, you know, I want to figure out how that works, because for as hard as that person works at the tasks of the day, I think what keeps, you know, him, just that for me, is the fact that he can do that, you know. I don't know how you do that. I get pissed, and I get, you know, ugly, and I cut off, you know. And that's not how I want to be, because I hold that. When I cut someone off, I hold that cut off.
Yeah.
Good person.
Beauty is evidence of life. People who display their beauty, both physical and spiritual, are advertising their life energy. Decorating ourselves can help the exchange of life because it attracts others, pleases their eyes, and we are attracted to these beautiful people because we're attracted to vigor, which we want to feed our own lives.
There are things that people find beautiful that I find totally repugnant.
Give an example.
So there's this tattoo shop across the street from where I live. And it's, the whole thing's painted black, and it says something on the sign. It's like, I don't remember the name of the shop, but it's something like The Darkness or something. And most of the artwork is pretty macabre. Like, I was in there one time looking at the, I don't know what they call it, like kind of the stock things. And there's some obsession with...
You mean the designs?
The designs, like, yeah. And the general aesthetic of, like, I'm going to paint this building black and glorify darkness. To me, I guess I see enough darkness in the world anyway. I don't fetishize it. I don't find it necessarily attractive in disproportion to other things.
When you go in there, how much are you observing the people that seem to be attracted to the shop and the darkness? And how much can you tell? Like, what do you think is going on there? Why do you think that they would be attracted to it?
I feel like for me to make that assessment is probably outside of my realm of experience.
I don't know if I've been there.
This is the thing. If I worked at the shop or next door to the shop and I had enough experience, I feel like I could maybe make some. But right now, I feel like it'd just be unfairly dismissive of a group of people. Okay. So
You're just saying this is your reaction to it.
That's my reaction to it. You know, I'm just saying, like, that's a thing that people find beautiful that I don't necessarily... I think beauty doesn't happen outside of you. Like, when you see something beautiful, that's actually... Beauty is a description of a process that takes place inside of you. It has nothing to do with the thing that's outside. You know, a lot of people see sunsets and find them beautiful. That doesn't mean that a sunset is objectively beautiful. I'm colorblind. Mm-hmm. So for the longest time, and now I can appreciate the contrast and the shades and everything. I've worked for it. Mm-hmm. But for the longest time, I would see a sunset and think, what's the big deal? My mom would take us, in the fall time, she'd take all of us kids, there's six of us, put us in a van and drive us around town to look at all the pretty colors of the leaves. Mm-hmm. I thought they were crazy. I thought my family was crazy.
So you're that colorblind, wow.
For me, the color was going out of the leaves, you know, they're becoming more faint. Oh, Obama's calling. I went to his speech recently. No, I didn't. But this is what I wish that he'd said. We started from the bottom, and now we're here. We started from the bottom, and now the whole team's here.
Pretty much what he did. Yes. Sounds like every politician.
Yes. Yeah.
If you can just say things vague enough, you can
get by. Yes, totally. Yeah. Especially if they're Drake lyrics. Now, I think...
Let's talk about people.
Okay.
The beautiful people. People that you just want to be around.
Yeah.
And tell me, like, describe what you think makes them beautiful and what do you maybe benefit from it? What are you feeding off of?
Yeah. For me, you know, I think it might be a little bit different than most people's take on what a beautiful person is. But for me, it's honestly just a person who's responding authentically in the moment. And I've been the guy who has spent a lot of time, willingly spent a lot of time around folks that other people don't necessarily even find that appealing, just because I do appreciate an authenticity. Like, I'm always attracted to people who, when I see them, I can tell what's going on with them. Moment to moment. unanticipated moment to unanticipated moment. I do have a couple friends that are very good at curating their output, and by that I mean every sentence is structured beautifully. Their behaviors are not pretentious, but deliberate. And I think that that's a great thing that somebody can become a virtuoso at, but it has to be a great version of it.
Okay. In this day and age, it seems like, for example, like political correctness. Let's talk about that a little bit. So let's say like I'm not quite sure about something that we're all going along with in society. And I just say it, like, I'm not real sure. I don't know how to, I'm kind of agnostic on that issue. And it can be used against you. Like, he's being hateful, or he's not trying to be understanding and that type of thing. What you're saying about these raw things, which I agree with you, I think that's a beautiful thing. You feel like you're getting something in its purest form, even though maybe chaotic and a little bit
based. And sometimes it's wrong.
Yeah, sometimes wrong, yeah. I don't know what my question was in saying that. Do you ever fear yourself? Because I assume that you try to be that kind of person.
I try to. Yeah. I think half the time I'm that, and half the time I'm pretentious in trying to come off like that. And then I have to catch myself.
Do you ever, like, catch yourself saying, like, well, I'm not going to be that honest about that particular subject because people could really take it wrong or
there
use
are,
it against me?
Yes. Okay. I think there are times when I do. It's been a constantly changing canon of the things that I'm willing to do that with and the things that I'm not. I would say whenever it's in question, I have historically erred on the side of, well, just put it out there. I feel like for the most part, I'm okay with being authentic, even at the risk of possibly offending. However, I also am not trying to all over everybody.
Right.
Again, beauty is evidence of life. People who display their beauty, both physical and spiritual, are advertised in their life energy. Decorating ourselves can help the exchange of life because it attracts others, pleases their eyes, and we are attracted to these beautiful people because we're attracted to vigor, which we want to feed our own lives.
I guess, like, immediately it makes me think of that Marilyn Manson song, Beautiful People.
I don't know it, but go ahead.
Beautiful people, beautiful people.
I don't really know what else he says besides that, but kind of like, you know, I think we see beauty and how healthy we look and how good we look. And I mean, life gives us that color that death takes away from us. So like whenever you see somebody that's healthy, you see, oh, they, well, in like the Mexican culture, like if you know somebody's sick and then you see them healthy and you say, oh, se ven llenos de vida. They look like they're full of life. And I mean, also like in some tribes, like, or like even like the Aztecs, and there was so much jewelry and facial makeup that was used to show life, to show beauty. And I guess that's also why you get that pregnancy glow, because you have life in you.
Yeah.
And you've got that extra glow of life that you're bringing into the world. You see such a big thing, celebrities now making a big deal out of being beautiful without makeup or just being beautiful just the way they are, when in reality, even what they are is fake.
Right. If you have to tell everybody that you're not wearing makeup, look at me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, look at me, I'm not wearing makeup and I look beautiful.
Wow, I didn't think about that. That's even more arrogant.
Yeah. I mean, even to the point where the way we treat our dead. And that's one of the things that I love about comments about people when I go to the funeral. Oh, she looks really good. Oh, he looks really good. And I'm like, really? He's dead. He's stiff. You think that looks good? Then in life, he must have looked like really crappy.
Because he looks terrible now.
Because if you think like that purple eyeshadow is doing it for him, I don't know about you. But, you know, that's one of the things. They use like very vibrant colors to make them look alive, again, to give that last feeling of life that they don't have.
next quote. Our own lives via the constant exchange of life will touch strangers in every corner of the world for the remainder of human history that will never know our names and never set their eyes on our bodies.
I think that's true. And I think it's happening faster in the world of communication now. I'm amazed. You know, we have Facebook friends. We've really never met them. They know a name. But, and you know, you shoot a couple of lines to them. And yet, some of the feedback I've gotten, you know, whether it's musically or, you know, somebody, some local friends here who have personal problems, and I put in an interjection, all of a sudden I say, wow, you know, I never thought about doing something that way. And so I think we do, whether we know it or not, by what we do. I think of all the people that I've touched in all the years I've been a symphony musician. The few that have come up and said, we really like it, you know, thank you so much for what you're doing. And those others, the majority who walk out of the concert hall and say, wow, that was great music and stuff, but didn't realize, you know, the part I played in it. And so, yeah, I think we do.
Can you give an example of maybe, this would kind of contradict this a little bit, where someone affected you and you didn't know who they were previously, and then you later found out, like, oh, this is because of this person.
It hasn't affected me personally, but I keep thinking of, I was an 8-gallon blood donor. Who did I, you know? Or I'm going to be an organ donor, and I've just signed up with the Neptune Society that I'm going to be cremated, but they are able to harvest what is good, and I'll never meet the people, but you know, somebody will, if everything is in good shape. So I think nothing springs to mind, because most of the people that have influenced my life, I've had contact with them in one way or another.
What about your family? You've maybe a saying or a philosophy that maybe kind of specific to your family that you found out later, oh, that was Uncle So-and-so's doing, or that was your great-grandmother from...
That's one of the things I missed in my childhood. We didn't get a lot of history and genealogy. My sister and I have racked our brains, and my daughter's big into the genealogy. And so whatever we've been able to pass on to her, she's getting some advantage. But, like, I only knew grandparents, and they passed on rather early. You know, before I was 8 years old, I think I lost both sets of grandparents. And I only remember them as going over for holiday meals or something. It wasn't like grandma and grandpa came over. Not like now where you have the grandparents who are an active part. And sadly, and my sister and I talk about that we didn't have that. You know, my father worked 20 hours a day and my mother helped him. And, you know, there wasn't, I mean, I played Little League Baseball, I think, 1 year. And my mother took me to the games because my father was busy work. You know, like, we didn't stand outside on a Saturday and throw a football to each other. He won me a bicycle, my old Schwinn Roadmaster bicycle with the white sidewall tires. And bowling, it was a prize that he won. But
so you were saying, like, if you had done things like throwing the ball, that he might have transferred more?
I think so. I think had we had a relationship like I've seen other families where there's more of a family life, I think we would have picked up on a lot more family. My sister and I were more influenced by other families that we knew when we went to college and stuff that we became close to. When I was in the Peace Corps in Bolivia, I became very close to a refugee family from Germany that migrated to Bolivia. And we knew each other for 3 years. I mean, I went over every Friday night for dinner. And I'm still friends with their daughter, who lives in Scottsdale, Arizona now.
And the flow of, the river flow of wisdom and proverbs and, you know, secrets to making life a little bit less difficult. Do you have anything unique or anything that you kind of live by, maybe a mantra or something you would like to add to that? Something you wanted your grandkids to know?
It's the good old musical mantra, practice, practice, practice.
Okay.
Thank you.
own lives via the constant exchange of life will touch strangers in every corner of the world for the remainder of human history that will never know our names and never set their eyes on our bodies.
Yeah, I say that all the time.
Really?
Oh, in a roundabout way. So you have no idea what you say to somebody that is that affects them and their family or the way they raise their kids and the kids' kids. You have no idea how you affect people.
Yeah. But obviously, for us to say this, we must have had some evidence of something you said or something you did years ago did affect people that you never met, but maybe you eventually did meet them.
You know, let's face it, right now with technology, you have no idea what you write on Twitter that hits the right person or Facebook. And you just don't know what you're, how you're affecting people. And that's everybody. Right. Like, just through social media, let's face it, like, you can almost live forever. Like, our kids, let's say they have, like, Facebook, by the time they pass away, everything about them can be documented where you could actually, like, almost live forever in your essence. You know? Like, but that's kind of on a tangent there.
Well, I mean, like, Facebook pages could be tombstones.
Yeah, really. Exactly. And, you know, won't be long till we have holograms and you can pull up your grandmother and, you know, she could have a conversation with her. She could almost even, like, tell you how to do that recipe.
Our own lives via the constant exchange of life will touch strangers in every corner of the world for the remainder of human history that will never know our names and never set their eyes on our bodies.
From China current life, we can affect it all, affect any other person who is just around you, even though you never met it. You can put some diaries or your life feelings on some WeChat or some Facebook like that, then put it on, and your friends, they will see what you think about life. And if they have the same feelings you, they will talk to you and discuss about this. And as well, so he will forward this feeling verse to his WeChat, and then another person maybe also can get it. Even though the third person you never meet, but he also can affect it by you.
So WeChat is kind of like Facebook or QQ?
Yeah, it's like about that. Okay. And as well, you also can be affected by other people on life, because now I'm just 27, and you know, some other older people, like the 30 or 40 or 50, they're much older than me, and they talk to me for something. Maybe this is their experience about life, but I'm sure they also be affected by other people. So he got the philosophy about upper people's knowledge. When he discussed with me, he put the third one's philosophy to me. And when I have the same feeling as it, I found I was affected. So this is how affected and be and affected others. When I was very little, I still at home. You know, my country is very poor. So the normal people's information, news get just by mouth. And we have heard maybe the one big news has happened. Maybe after 1 month or 2 months, this news will come from the far away, far place to our countryside. We don't know how the world outside is. So we don't know how to make the innovation, don't know how to develop our countryside. To, even though we try to, but we have no any other people's guide or news, so we cannot learn it. This is the most important way, still keep poor now, I think. And also, you know, China is an old history country. So as well, some information about that will be told from our grandpa. They lived in that historic time, so they have their own feeling about that. So sometimes we also can be affected by them. Even though from now we think it's very old, it's their basic, you know, that feeling. Like Japanese has treated China like that, and our grandpa is so feel that, okay, Japanese is so bad, and they just raved about China. But now, when we discuss about Japan again, the next generation or this kind of generation, they maybe have not that strong feeling.
Because they weren't alive during World War II.
No. They do not have the real feeling. But they also can be affected, but the feeling is not that so strong as theirs.
It's different when you hear about it from when you see it happen, when the Japanese were raping and killing.
Okay.
So about the information affect the people's life, I think now that we change the information every day and we get the new information from all over the world, I think it's not good things for us, because the price, they give us the information, but maybe they controlled by the government or something. They give the same information to us, and the control of our mind made us do not to think.
So they're using exchange of information to control people.
Yeah, most of us cannot. We don't know which information is useful to us or which is just lead us to the way they want we us go there. So I think sometimes it's not good because we are not that wise, so we cannot tell. Here is a phenomenon appears in our younger generation, that is we crazy about the pop stars, you know, the actors, the singers. We don't care about the politics, we don't care anything about the economic, we just care the superstars, and we invest much money to them. So they don't think about their future, they don't live in their real life, they just live their imagined world. I think it's not good, and they don't pay attention to read much more books and open their mind.
So who's your favorite pop star?
Taylor Swift.
Busted.
Yeah.
Again, our own lives via the constant exchange of life will touch strangers in every corner of the world for the remainder of human history that will never know our names and never set their eyes on our bodies.
So my husband teaches as a professor in college, and he had a guest lecturer come in and talk about this concept of gratitude, of really focusing on gratitude, like really actually acknowledging what it is you're grateful for in your life. And then the next step, which was really cool, is figuring out where that gratitude, like what person you can apply that gratitude to, and specifically thanking them for it, which is like a whole other level because it like kind of completes the circle. And so he came home and told me about that. And then I maybe posted about it on Facebook, I think, and I was communicating with a friend from elementary school who was having similar health problems to me, and from like months ago, really. And then I got this package in the mail, and it was kind of amazing because my friend from elementary school had heard, I think it was a Facebook post that I had said about the gratitude thing and about acknowledging who you're grateful to for what. And she sent me, like, and you know, I mean, just like take a second to think about the magnitude of receiving a package in the mail these days. I mean, you know, to actually get something that you're holding in your hands that's tangible. I just am thrilled by that. So she sent me a thank you note, specifically thanking me for that concept, sharing that concept, and the influences I had had on her life as of late. And then she also included a meditation CD, because the influence that I apparently had on her had to do with starting a meditation practice. Then I felt even more inspired to practice, like work on my own meditation practice, you know, which kind of comes and goes. But the fact that I had influenced her in that way and that she was doing it inspired me to keep doing it. And I still have the CD and I still have the package it came in. Because it's so rare, I think, to get that kind of tangible proof that you've had a positive impact on anybody's life. I think I see it even symbolically as proof that it's good to share myself with the world, even if I don't necessarily get the feedback that I ideally would love to get.
It's definitely I think a measure of, like you say, gratitude, because the last time I stood in line at the post office, I think somebody in front of me was smelling bad and somebody else was on the phone loud. And then, of course, they only have one guy working and then there's like 20 people waiting and they give you,
right.
You know, they can have some attitude when you get up there. And I thought, I must really like this person that I'm sending this package. So I can tell you, you are loved. So you should cherish that package. Yeah.
Although the last time I went to the post office, and I don't go very often either, I had this amazing conversation with this guy who he was in love with my coat. I have this amazing winter coat that is made out of a Native American blanket that my mom made, and I added this like faux fur around the edges and big buttons. And whenever I wear it, people like stop and talk to me about it.
That's cool.
I maybe need like a secondary winter coat to wear when I feel antisocial.
Right.
But this guy behind me kept talking to me about it, and we started talking about sewing and how he was adorable. He was like this retired guy, and he was really excited about the idea of learning how to sew and taking a class at the community college and using his daughter's sewing machine that she never uses. And like, he totally entertained me the whole time I was waiting in line.
And that kind of goes to show you that whoever made that coat was affecting people that they will never meet, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. And my mom, who I'm actually like intentionally not in contact with right now. And it's kind of amazing because like the goodness of the spirit of our relationship does kind of live on in that coat.
There we go. Well, if you haven't figured out, there is a common theme to all these quotes. This episode of Tried and Heard Cats is special in that all the quotes come from one guy. The guy in question still has a pulse. And I know him. The guy, Pan Che, is a teacher and philosopher on mainland China who wrote a book called Shengming de Jiao Huan, or The Exchange of Life, which sums up his philosophy. How I came across Pan's ideas was back when I was teaching in China. Many of my students kept telling me that I needed to meet another teacher at the institute who they kind of imply was also a, quote, old man with a child's heart, philosophically speaking. One student whispered to me that the teacher had been denounced and persecuted by Red Guards during the Cultural Revolution for having books forbidden by the Communist Party. Another student told me that in modern China, it's common for teachers, activists, and politicians to preach compassion, honesty, simple living, etc., and yet they will still drive away from the speech in an Audi or a Mercedes-Benz that they could have only acquired through corruption. So after hearing an inspiring message by Professor Pan, the student telling me this, and his friend hid outside the building to see what kind of car he drove away in, Pan left on a bicycle, and a not very good one at that. In time, they put Pan and me together, and we hit it off as predicted. I became so taken with the man, in fact, that I spent a summer with another friend translating the core ideas of his book. I gave some recordings of Pan I'd made to one of my students, who was an aspiring rapper, and told him to make a song based on the ideas. And I began to write a book of fiction to try to put his philosophy inside a story. That said, here are some more of Pan's sayings. Realizing one has a need that's not been fulfilled is finding the reason for most of our motives. When we understand what we need, we'll understand our behavior. And realizing the needs of others will reveal the motive and behavior of them as well. While creating, it's vital to remember that those with no life or energy to offer only replicate something that's already been created. Well-trod, proven, and dull roads are their preferred avenues, and they and their lives will be instantly forgotten before they even flicker out. At the same time, consumers with withering lives want only the creations they already know and are comfortable with. Thus, to be truly a creator and an exporter of life, one needs freedom from both ourselves and others' expectations. And here's one more. One must be wary of groups. It's more complicated and difficult for whole groups of people to exchange life. The individuals must adjust their behavior and consumption to the will of the group, and if one tries to grow as one should within a group, there will be conflict and suppression. This can hold the individual's exchange and growth back at best. At worst, if one loses oneself or hides within a group or the masses, the individual instincts and natural inclination towards growth is lost. One dies anonymous. And here's some additional thoughts by my friend who helped with the translations and goes by the pseudonym Moonlight.
I have read his book, Shengming de Jiao Huan. at least 8 times.
Can you tell us the basic idea of his philosophy of life?
The first one is everyone should value ourselves by exchanging our ideas and exchanging our work with other people. By doing this, we can exchange our lives with other people. This can brighten our life, can improve each of us.
When you say exchange life, can you give some specific examples?
Yes, I think just take me as an example. In a long time, I like to be alone, maybe at home, maybe at office. I don't want to communicate with other people in the society. I want to be alone. But I think to stay alone is a kind of wasting your life. If you can step out to communicate with others, to exchange your lives with others, your life will be different. You can be a better life. You can be a different person.
The way I understand it, it's a little bit like life is water. And people are always like pouring into each other.
Yeah.
One thing.
So we should, in limited times, we should do more things we like to make us different from others, to make us progress every day, to value ourselves and to make progress and to make us to grow up. After I read this book, I became more active in every kind of experience. So I think this book can encourage people to be active, to do some value things to the society, to be much better,
you mean?
Better and to be valuable.
So can you give an example of how your life has benefited
since
you have read this book?
The first thing is I want to communicate with more people by exchanging ideas, by doing something I'm good at. And maybe some people, they are not good at doing something, but this is my talent, so I want to help him. I'm more active to exchange your ideas with other people.
So when he had his book published, Exchange of Life, there was a small bit of trouble with the book, right?
They just cut off maybe 10,000 words from his book.
Yeah, they censored 10,000 words.
But today, because China is more open, so the words which had been cut off, if we read it today, it should be published in the book.
So stay tuned to future Trying to Herd Cats episodes, where I'm sure more of Pan's ideas will end up. In the meantime, if you want to learn more, you're welcome to contact me and I'll give you what I have. Or you can do a search on YouTube for Exchange of Life by Ray MC, that's spelled R-U-I-M-C, a simple music video that has some more thoughts by Pan. In the Corner, Back by the Woodpile podcast is produced by A Closet, A Pocket, and A Suitcase. You can email us at spuncounterguy@hotmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @spuncounterguy. And if you'd like to see a list of former episodes of In the Corner, Back by the Woodpile, go to spuncounterguy.com and click on the pictures of piles of wood with chairs in front. And a special thanks to thebrofisticate.com.
而这种选择当然它就和生命对于自由的追求联系到一块儿了。